and thank you for your support. On this episode of GERD Talk, we will be continuing our series on GERD surgery. We'll be talking about the Lynx surgery specifically. That's L-I-N-X. That is a surgery that is relatively new compared to the Nissen fundoplication. And we'll be talking about whether it works, what to expect, with my special guest, Travis. Wright Travis is an author and lives in Colorado. And I heard of Travis's story on a forum about Lynx and acid reflux. Travis joins us today on the program. Travis, thank you so much for coming on GERD Talk.
Thank you so much, Stu. I appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and it's good to have you on the program. So, as I mentioned before, I actually heard about your story, Travis, on a Facebook group. I'd actually read a post, and you had said that your surgery was a success and that it went so well that you felt like you've had the surgery for years. And I'd actually read the post initially and thought that you had it for years, which is why I initially reached out to you to do the interview to hear from someone who's had the surgery for years and to hear about your experience. But then I reread the post after I had contacted you already and realized that the post actually said you had the surgery for only a couple months, but it went so well that you felt like you had it for years. So it's kind of a funny story, but I decided to go through with the interview because I felt like your experience with the surgery is valuable. A lot of stories on surgeries, GERD surgeries, are sad because many people report that they don't work, but your case was positive, and so I thought that would be a good balance to the interviews I've been having. So can you tell us about your story with acid reflux? What was happening when you first got acid reflux, and what were your symptoms?
Yeah, really good question. So I have had acid reflux my entire life. Some of my earliest memories are complaining to my mom that I had hot breath, which I think was a kid's way of saying, man, I got some really bad heartburn. So I've had it my entire life, and I've always had this constant burn, just on a regular baseline. And that burn would always be stepped up a notch or two whenever there was any sort of exertion, whether it was running really fast or swimming hard or playing ice hockey or even moving furniture. That burn would just go up a couple levels. So I've had it my entire life, and I've been on, up until having the surgery, I've been on PPIs for close to two decades. I took 7,000 milligrams of antacids every day, and up to 5 to 7 Imodiums per day as well to help counteract the effects of Prilosec or Nexium. Mm-hmm.
And other than the burning, did you experience any other symptoms such as regurgitation, which is like one of the typical symptoms of acid reflux?
No real regurgitation. But I did have an upper endoscopy last year, and there were some complications with that, primarily due to the Imodium kind of slowing down digestion. And I ended up having aspiration pneumonia. Just to be graphic, I basically vomited in my lung during the procedure, and nearly died. Despite following all of the hospital's instructions to, cut off food before 9 p.m. and eat a light meal and everything. But that endoscopy, I pulled out of it, and obviously I'm here today, but the endoscopy showed Barrett's esophagus, which at my age, mid 30s, that's not normal, and something needed to be done quickly to prevent that from turning into cancer.
Mm-hmm. And any other symptoms you experienced other than the burning, maybe like a sore throat? Did you experience any other symptoms other than those?
Pretty much the burning, but last year there were more and more warning signs. A big one was, so I've had flawless teeth for my entire life. But suddenly, I reached my mid-30s, and I got, after having no cavities whatsoever, I got 7 cavities, 5 of them in just one visit. And my dentist and I talked, and he mentioned to me, you know, Travis, you have perfect home health care, but these cavities are because of acid reflux. Like, you know, basically he was another canary in the coal mine saying, you really have a problem here and you need to do something.
Mm-hmm. So cavities, burning, and just recently you found out you had Barrett's esophagus. So you get the surgery, and how long has it been since you got the surgery?
So surgery was 15 weeks ago yesterday.
Okay. 15 weeks. So that's about
three months. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
That's great. And, you know, actually, could you explain to some of my listeners who may not know what the LINC surgery is, what it is, what exactly do they do?
Yeah, for sure. So the LINCs, the best way to describe kind of where it goes and what it is, if you hold out your hand flat in front of you, you have your four fingers and your palm. That would basically be your stomach. And your thumb would be the esophagus. And so basically what the LINCs is a thumb ring, using this as an analogy. So it is a really elegant design. At the factory, they laser weld magnetic beads, and they coat those beads in titanium. And it looks like one of those candy necklaces that you probably used to eat as a kid, but it's obviously much smaller. It's about the same diameter as a quarter. And that is placed surgically around the base of the esophagus. Yeah. And then the other thing that I didn't know, initially when I first met with my surgeon, is, you know, the LINCs actually connects, it's basically a straight line, and they kind of connect both ends of it. So it elegantly wraps around, they don't need to forcefully remove your esophagus from your stomach or anything graphic. They just elegantly loop it around.
Right. And, you know, in my opinion, I do think that the LINCs is somewhat better than the Neeson because, you're not sewing the top of your stomach to your stomach, and there seems to be less complications. But the LINC surgery, I mean, it is still somewhat similar to the Neeson in that you still got to cut through all this connective tissue around your esophagus, so it does get to be a bloody mess. But I would say, in my opinion, that the metal or the magnetic ring that they put around your lower esophageal sphincter does seem better to me. Now, before you had the surgery, did the doctor inform you of the surgery success rates? Did they tell you about any risks?
Great questions. So, yeah, he did mention, there are some... there's some risks, the device eroding into the esophagus, is a risk.
Sorry, what do you mean by eroding the esophagus?
So it's if the LINCs is not sized properly, so they during the surgery, before they choose which LINCs you'll get, because there's certain bead types, there used to be a 12 bead, but now the smallest is 13, 14, 15, 16, etc. So it's basically measured against the size of your esophagus. If for some reason that is too small, that can squeeze into the esophagus more than it should and begin with some erosion, beginning to come inside of the esophagus. It's rare, but they did mention that is a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it goes in. Does it cut through the esophagus, or more like it displaces it?
Yeah, more of a, from what I understand, more of like a cutting where it's almost too tight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, that sounds
right.
Pretty serious.
Yeah, and it was important to find a surgeon who was really skilled at doing these.
Uh-huh. What did you feel after you got the surgery? What were your, symptoms? Was it a success immediately, or did it take some time? or did you immediately feel better afterwards?
Great question. So it's a little bit of both. There was actually a complication during the surgery, and it had nothing to do with the links or repairing of the hiatal hernia that I had. I had a hernia in my diaphragm that no one knew about, and they believe it was basically a birth defect. It was just there all along. So when they filled up my stomach cavity with carbon dioxide, there was a hole in the diaphragm and all of that carbon dioxide went rushing against my lungs. So as a result, I had to be on oxygen for a few days following the surgery. So, you know, one of my first memories of waking up post-surgery is a big oxygen mask on my face. And that's usually, you know, that's a cause for alarm right away. So I knew something was not totally right. But it, you know, I worked through it and was glad that that was not, you know, a complication directly related to the links. But in terms of waking up, the burn was gone right away. It was pretty amazing. But what I did feel was a lot of shoulder pain. And the best way to describe it is if you were to give another adult a shoulder ride all day long, how would your shoulders feel for the next week? So that's about how this felt.
Mm-hmm. So the burn went right away. You were able to eat. Now, did this burn come when you ate something, or was it just a constant burn even when you weren't eating?
Yeah, so yeah, my entire life, whether I was eating or not, there was just this constant, constant burn.
Mm-hmm. Okay, constant burn. Did you experience this in your chest?
Chest area and, you know, kind of, yeah, right above my stomach and into my chest for you know, my whole life.
And so after the burn was gone, did you experience any other complications, like maybe a day, a couple days after surgery, or maybe even a month?
So, or, good question.
I mean, was it just, you know, pretty much all your symptoms were gone and that was that?
Yeah, the pain was gone. The shoulder pain definitely lessened after, 3 to 4 days after the surgery. One thing that is common is some difficulty swallowing after you have the LINX surgery. And I knew that going in, but I didn't know what would it be like. So it was kind of an interesting sensation because basically I had no lower esophageal sphincter. So now all of a sudden you basically put a traffic cop at the bottom of your esophagus. And, you know, food can, if you swallow too quickly or take too big of bites, that food begins to back up. And it takes a minute for the muscles in your esophagus to process that and push it through that magnetic force into your stomach. So, you know, that those issues swallowing were inconvenient, but they're not life threatening. And the reason they're not is because it happens below your windpipe. So you're not choking. And in fact, the best way to describe it, it feels like brain freeze, but in the center of your chest.
Mm-hmm. And so when you say you have no LES or you didn't have an LES, do you mean that the LES wasn't working properly or you actually didn't have the muscle?
Both. Yeah. I'm sure I have one, but it's very weak.
Got it.
But now it's been augmented with technology. So it's.
Gotcha. So how do you feel today, like on a day-to-day basis?
I feel absolutely terrific. I've never felt better. And that's a true statement because I've never known life without acid reflux, especially having grown up with it. So these last 3+ months have just been just life changing.
Awesome, that's wonderful. So I want to touch back on what you said about growing up as a child with acid reflux, because you don't hear too many stories, or there's not too many babies that are growing up with acid reflux, dealing with acid reflux. It's not too common among children. It is, however, more common in older folks. I almost said old people. Don't want to offend anybody who's older than me listening to this, but Yeah, and you know, babies are starting to get it more and more. But could you tell us about that? I mean, were you diagnosed with like a weak esophageal sphincter when you were a baby?
I think it was just a weak from when I was born. I do believe, though, that it's genetic. My dad actually died from cancer caused by acid reflux. So, you know, genetics is unfortunately pretty strong. So it's, you know, this is pretty rough stuff in my family.
Yeah. Now, do you know that the acid reflux came like right after you were born, or did it start at an older age?
I think it was around the time of being a toddler, because that's really when, you know, my parents, I don't believe, did any sort of diagnostic tests when I was very young. But, you know, kind of Dr. Mom type stories where, you know, I would complain of having that hot breath and she would give me an antacid. And, you know, that would fix the problem, or at least, you know, hold it at bay. But, you know, my mom with her radar would determine, you know, is it because he likes the taste of antacids? And but it was not that at all. It was, you know, she was able to find that distinction that, no, there is something going on here.
Got it. Now, I don't know if you have an idea, but I think you're part of the Lynx group, so maybe you do. But any idea on what the success rate is for the Lynx surgery, what the failure rate looks like? Do most people who get the surgery have positive results by and large?
Yeah, good question. It seems like a mixed bag, especially, you know, having seen, you know, the posts on the two different Lynx groups that I'm on and Facebook. You know, there's some roaring successes and some heartbreaking failures. So I wouldn't say it's 100% successful. But, you know, determining why that might be, you know, I'm sure there's different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so now, okay, you've had the surgery. Was there any special diet that you were put on by the doctors after surgery, or any special diet you're eating now, or basically you can eat anything you want?
So great question. I'm able to eat anything I want. For example, last night we went out for Mexican food, and I, when everyone was done with the salsa, I just picked up the small container and tipped it back like a shot. Before I couldn't have done that. I would have avoided it like the plague. And today I enjoyed onions with my food. Those are, you know, salsa, onions, tomato sauce, chocolate, those types of things. I really enjoyed, but I had to stay away from it, because it would just inflame the volcano within.
And so I guess I want to ask this about the surgery. I forgot to ask this, but when you had the surgery, what's the recovery time? How long do you have to wait until you start eating again?
Yeah, so they want you to start eating immediately, just to, you know, get the links working to make sure that everything is good before you leave the surgery center. And part of the recovery, the physical therapy, is they want you to eat every single hour that you're awake for a good 2+ months.
Wow. Every single hour?
Every single hour. So it was...
Okay, I just want to make sure I heard
right.
that correctly.
So I estimate, I did it for 14 weeks just because I wanted to play it really safe. And I estimate that was probably 1,500 unique eating events within the last 14 weeks of doing that. So it's a first world problem to have to eat every hour, and you don't realize how quickly those hours come one after the other, especially when you're tired of eating, but you got to do it.
Now, I hear that for some people that after they had the Lynx, it's difficult for them to belch. Has that been the case for you?
I don't. No, I'm able to, belch easily, and supposedly you're able to, to, unlike the Nissan, you're able to vomit with the Lynx. Oh. I have not tried that, and that's not on the bucket list, but supposedly I can.
And before you got the surgery, I'm just curious, did you try anything in terms of diet? Maybe experimented with a couple different diets to see if that would help with your acid reflux?
I did, yeah. So I was desperate for any sort of relief. So, you know, a lot of the advice that I got on diet, I actually got from my dad when kind of near the end of his life, when he couldn't talk anymore. We traded a lot of text messages about, you know, best practices that need to be done in terms of everything from, you know, elevating your bed to what you should and shouldn't eat. So yeah, I was really mindful of not exacerbating the situation with you know, with foods that would make this worse. But what's really interesting is I don't feel that diet made a difference, and I actually have data to back that up. So one of the four different tests that was required to find out if I was a good Lynx candidate or not, was a Bravo test or a pH test. And so they basically implant a capsule full of electronics in the very back of your throat, and then give you essentially a pager to walk around with. Some people do that for 24 or 48 hours. My surgeon recommended 96. So that was really tough, especially because I had to be off of PPIs like Nexium or Prilosec, as well as antacids, for a week before that test even began. So it was unbridled acid reflux for that entire week, and then I had to eat normally. And you know, the first night I did you know, pasta with red sauce and brownies and a little bit of red wine, just trying to see, you know, what that would look like in a couple days when I got those results back.
You're talking about the pH test results?
Correct.
Now, okay, so this is when you're testing to be a good candidate or see if you're a good candidate.
Exactly.
Okay, so you were eating these foods to see if you would get worse or the same results?
Correct, yeah, especially without the controls of medication.
Okay.
And I did that for 2 days, you know, just kind of eating foods. You know, if I'm going to be in pain, I might as well be having fun in terms of, you know, having a bit of onions, et cetera. But by day three, it was so painful because I would be up all night just with this shooting fiery pain in my chest. So on day three, I ate bland chicken noodle soup with saltine crackers and a little bit of ginger ale. And that day was actually the highest single day acid score for that entire Bravo test. So, you know, diet didn't really seem to make a difference.
Okay, gotcha. So saltine crackers, ginger ale, chicken, and then for the first day when you were testing to see the severity, you did pasta with red sauce. Was there any other diet that you tried to see if that would impact the acid reflux? I guess I'm talking more like before you're considering surgery.
Yeah, good question. Not really. You know, apart from, you know, just trying to keep the junk out of the diet, you know, going more for, you know, ingredients that you can pronounce. You know, my wife's an exceptional cook. So, you know, having, you know, just natural things, chicken and zucchini and you know, asparagus, things that you can pronounce, and not things that glow fluorescent in the chip aisle. So, you know, just trying to stay as natural as possible.
Gotcha. So if you had a friend who was considering the Lynx surgery, what would you tell? Many tips of advice from your personal experience?
So I would say, you know, you know, first and foremost, especially because I'm not a doctor or a surgeon or a nurse, you know, to speak to those qualified medical professionals and basically, you know, be really, really detailed, you know, whether it's keeping notes just to, you know, if you think you have acid reflux or acid or heartburn more than a couple times a week, you know, that should really be documented and mentioned to a doctor before it gets worse. So, you know, kind of taking detailed notes, really listening to yourself and to what your body's telling you, and, you know, following medical advice. If they say to cut something out of your diet or to add something in, you know, to follow that. You know, if it was a friend or a family member who was in these same situations that I was in, you know, PPI medication is not meant for long duration use. It's meant for, you know, a two week cycle. You know, once or twice a year. It's not meant for every single day. And that, you know, their surgery might be a needed option. And in terms of recommending the links, I would do this a million times over. It's totally changed my life.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Well, Travis, thank you so much for coming on GERD Talk. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.